E60 special on Roy Halladay, Imperfect, the Roy Halladay story, debuts Friday on ESPN. And it's going to be on up here as well. It's getting a lot of buzz. And to chat a little bit about that and what he expects and how we look back on the life and times of Roy Halladay, we're joined now by our TSN Jays reporter, Scott Mitchell. How would you rate your anticipation level for this Halladay doc, Scotty?
Well, it's obviously probably behind The Last Dance and probably the Lance doc, too. But, I mean, when you look at this, I mean, the problem with this documentary, I think, for Blue Jays fans is I don't think it's going to paint Roy in the most glowing light. You know, it talks about some of the demons he struggled with. I mean, I think it's going to be very entertaining. I think it's going to be informative. But, you know, it's going to kind of paint a real picture of Roy Halladay. And I know I think a lot of people kind of maybe grasp a little bit what he struggled with. And, you know, the report last month when they finished their investigation into his death in the plane crash was obviously not glowing. And when you look at some of that, that's going to be in this documentary. So it's going to be sobering on one hand, and it's going to paint a real-life picture of one of the greatest Blue Jays in franchise history.
Yeah, but Scotty, I think, you know, humanizing guys and recognizing that even though he was a great baseball player, he was dealing with stuff that a lot of, you know, the general population deals with might make him even more relatable. I'm curious, though, if obviously we as fans had no idea what's going on in anybody's life. What about the people around the ball club or his teammates or even the media that are around the club every day? Was there any inkling that he was battling some of these demons?
No, I don't think so. I think when you look at some of the confidence issues that he, experienced early in his career, obviously going down to the minors in kind of extreme fashion in 2001 and then having to build his way back up. I mean, confidence was, one of the central themes of that whole experiment and experience for Roy Halladay. And, you know, he was one of the first players to kind of openly work with sports psychology and really embrace that. And it helped him. So, you know, working through that decade and, you know, kind of looking back on it now with hindsight, you know, maybe you can piece some of those things together, but no, at the time, you know, Roy Halladay was a bulldog, a guy who was out there every fifth day, a guy who experienced some injury troubles, but you know, you didn't expect to hear that a dependency or anything like that, something that would affect him to that extent, would be something that he was dealing with at the time, because the guy was one of the best pitchers in baseball, arguably the best pitcher of the entire decade in the 2000s. So, you know, this guy was a guy who was able to persevere whatever he was going through off the field.
Scotty, some of the stuff that you mentioned that came out last month and what we just been talking about, his struggles off the field, does that, I guess, for maybe even a baseball fan or people in the inner circles, does that tarnish his legacy even 5 to 10%, or is it just humanize him that, hey, you know what, he's just another athlete that went through some things and we got to look at his body of work and him as a person?
Look, I really hope it doesn't change how people look at Roy Halladay, the pitcher, and Roy Halladay, the person. I mean, I think we've come a long way over the past kind of half decade to a decade or so of kind of understanding mental issues and what people are going through and things like that. And teams have taken, steps to kind of put more resources into that side of the game and really kind of structure their staffs with a real mental approach in mind. So, you know, I think people will look at him the same way and the fact that he got through this and was able to still, like I say, you know, win two Cy Youngs, be one of the best pitchers in baseball. And then, you know, obviously the injuries took a toll. And I think that's what we're going to learn about in this documentary is just how bad the back injury was. And that was in the crash report, things like that about his dependencies. And I think it humanizes them. I think it makes the story one that really people can relate to, because everyone in the world, no matter if you're a multi-million dollar baseball pitcher or a guy just trying to work through COVID-19 right now, people deal with this in every walk of life.
Yeah, I think it will challenge how much people really want to know, though, right? Like that, and that's always been a conversation for a long, long time. Like, you go back to the early parts of the previous century, you didn't know anything, right? Like, everyone was just propping up every player like they were the greatest person on earth.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you get the news, like, years later, you're like, well, that guy was that guy was that, this guy was up to this, that guy was up to that. And at the time, you're like, okay, do we really want to know that? Because Halladay is just, he's got an image here of just being a machine and a horse and a guy who loved playing here and we loved watching him. And now this is going to open up the door that much more beyond what has already been reported into, you know, what was going on in his personal life.
And it really does open up the conversation of, you know, looking at these guys as heroes rather than just really good baseball players who you want to emulate on the field. So, you know, it's that's an interesting conversation in itself.
With Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter. So it sounds like the owners and the PA are going to war here, just based on the negotiations, them trying to work out the money before they even get to the logistics of playing and resuming play and how many games and where they're going to play in the hub cities and all that kind of stuff. This is a worst-case scenario for them. I'm not surprised, though, based on their history. How do you see this playing out between the owners and the PA moving forward?
Well, if you had to, you know, make me answer today whether there'd be a season, I mean, I would say it's exactly 50-50 right now. And, you know, there's so many steps to this and so many nuances and so many variables that, you know, it's real interesting. And they've got to go, you know, get to the table and figure out these financials first and foremost. And, you know, we've seen some of the reports out there. You know, the people I've talked to haven't really said that it's really as dire as you know, some people are presenting it as. And, you know, they've talked about the union being galvanized by this. And, you know, they're all on the same page. You know, I'll believe that when I see it. And, you know, the people I've talked to are still pretty confident that they'll be able to work through this. And, you know, whether that's a pie in the sky kind of positive outlook, which I kind of have, I didn't think they were going to strike back in 1994 either. So, I mean, like you said, there's a long history of these two sides not being able to get together. And then once you consider the fact you got to go from the financials to the health side, and that's a moving target. And then you got to figure out the venues too. You know, there's a lot of things to go, and you know, they've set a soft deadline for about a week from now. We'll see. They need to be playing baseball on a field in some sort of spring training 2.0 by the middle of next month. So you know, we got a couple weeks, but it started out ominously, just like most baseball negotiations do.
Let's just follow up on that, Scott. The timing of all this, you start working backwards, they're going to play 82 games, so that's going to take about 3 months. Is that July, August, September, and then playoffs in October? How long do they want training camp or spring training 2.0 to be? And you're right, like, when will that deadline? They got to figure this out by whatever date, or else they're going to run out of time to have an 82-game schedule.
Well, that's the thing. And, you know, right now they're watching two other sports, you know, take up their summer. And this is an interesting situation for baseball as a whole in terms of their popularity and where they go from here. Because if the NBA moves their season back like Mark Cuban wants and they start at Christmas, they're running into August. And then where do you leave baseball? I mean, it's clear that sport is, you know, much more popular right now than you run into the NFL, and baseball is going to be without their window. So they need to get this figured out. And really, when you look at what they want, they need at least 3 weeks in camp. So they want to start by the week of June 10th, you know, June 11th, that area, get 3 weeks in, and then start regular season games in the first week. And then this will be running through November into the postseason. The postseason will run through November, probably at neutral sites, Arizona, places like that, where you can control the climate. So, you know, there's just so many variables to this whole situation. But, you know, they've got about 10 days of negotiation here, and we'll see where it goes after that. But the time is starting to tick down for sure.
All right, Scotty, we'll leave it there. Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you.
All right, cheers, guys. Take care.
Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter. And he hits on a great point about just the timelines of other leagues starting to shift a little bit. Baseball has benefited so greatly for so long by essentially having a monopoly over the summer months, right? Yeah. Like in the sports world. Like, yeah, they compete with tennis and golf and training camps and a couple of other events, but in terms of big team sports, big four team sports, they've had a monopoly.
Yeah,
from mid-June all the way through basically September. And yeah. I guess the NFL shows up in September, so at least through August, but a good two and a half months where they are not competing with anybody down the States.
But people plan their lives around it too, Brian, like, you know, baseball in the summer, trips and going down to the park and all that. And if you have other sports, other options. And it's not just going to be other options for one summer. It's potential that, you know, the NHL could run into the summer for multiple years trying to catch up to the schedule. The NBA maybe
the NBA
the
might
same
stay
scenario.
There, Noodles.
Well, like, that's what I mean. Like they could be in real trouble as far as the pecking order. You know, just based on, and I'm wrong saying this because I'm not a huge baseball fan, but like the entertainment value too. I'll be honest, if there's an NBA game on or a baseball game on, especially if it's a team that you're not super interested in, I'll lean towards the NBA just on the entertainment value of what I'm watching.
Yeah, you're not alone in that, because also NBA, you know, it's going to be about 215, 220. Baseball, right. you commit to a game in the first inning, you might have to sit there for like 5.5 hours.
Like, you're
crazy. You don't know.
In today's day and age, where everyone wants everything right away and they're on their phones, or, you know, they're no one has time to sit there for 3.5, 4 hours watch a baseball game start to finish, filling out the old little scoreboard where you walk around the bases, whatever, you know, you used to do 25, 30 years ago.
Doesn't happen much anymore.
It just doesn't happen very often. So, I wonder, though, you know, in the idea of, like, you know, experimentation, all these different things, could they possibly, Hayes, go to the electronic umpire, call him balls and strikes?
I guess they could. I mean, there's a union.
Don't have the umpire leaning over top of the catcher? I mean, there's probably some sort of safety thing there as well. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question about, like, the logistics of them playing once they get back. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people that would love to see that. Like, the umps, people hate on the umpires. But they've got a union, right? So they're pretty well protected until the next CBA is up. But it's worthy of a conversation for sure.